Depression, the Way Out by Dr. Neil Nedley. Chapter 9, The Frontal Lobe of the Brain. Many reasoned that it would be the next major breakthrough in depression treatment. Their logic was compelling. Many cases of depression seemed to be caused or perpetuated by religious, spiritual, or moral concerns. They said if the source of these deleterious spiritual thoughts and depression were removed, the malady may be minimized or even cured. Such a treatment strategy appeared to help Joan's obviously depressed state. She feared that she had committed the unpardonable sin. Surgeons performed a frontal lobotomy on her. The new promising depression treatment. The front part of her brain was surgically removed. The results were remarkable. Immediately following the surgery, Joan's depressive ideas about an unforgivable sin had lifted. However, there was something disturbing about the results. The surgery had affected more than her depressive thoughts. It soon became apparent that her wisdom, judgment, and insight were all compromised. Joan's spirituality had been profoundly impacted. When asked about the Holy Spirit, Joan said, "What Holy Spirit? There's no Holy Spirit." In my book Proof Positive, I describe other cases of those who had their frontal lobes removed. Like Joan, depressive thoughts actually seemed to be resolved with a frontal lobotomy. However, the changes in personality, character, and responsibility have been so disconcerting that frontal lobotomy has fallen into virtual disuse in psychiatric surgery. To better appreciate the importance of the frontal lobe, consider the classic case of Phineas Gage. Gage lost the function of his frontal lobe as the result of a serious brain injury. Following a remarkable recovery from that profound trauma, he looked the same, talked the same, and walked the same. But fundamentally, he was a different person. Before the accident, Phineas was a well-loved and responsible husband. He was hardworking and intelligent. He was known for his high morals and exemplary record as a railroad foreman. After the accident, Gage's moral decline was immediately evident. He became overly emotional and was prone to outbursts of anger. Phineas lost interest in spiritual things, became irreverent, and used constant profanity. He forsook respect for social customs and became totally irresponsible. He went from a prized employee to the unemployment rolls. Dr. John Harlow, his physician, stated that the accident destroyed Gage's equilibrium or balance, so to speak, between his intellectual faculty and his animal propensities. Phineas Gage's traumatic frontal lobotomy cost him his personality, his moral standards, and his commitment to family, church, and loved ones. Depression's most important lobe. Why am I bringing up an antiquated surgery in a book devoted to cutting-edge insights on depression? There is one simple answer. A proper understanding of the frontal lobe is vital to developing a total line of attack for treating and preventing depression. Removing parts of the frontal lobe apparently helps certain types of depression in the short term. However, the procedure actually appears to put some individuals at very high risk for depression. Research suggests that if the dominant hemisphere of the frontal lobe is removed or compromised, depression is more likely to result. The dominant hemisphere is typically the left hemisphere in right-handed individuals and vice versa. However, other research suggests that removal or damage of either the left or the right frontal lobe can produce depression. Ironically, two people with the same frontal lobe damage can result in very different behavioral consequences. In one case, it may result in depressive symptoms with slowing of body movements, apathy, indifference, and lack of drive. In the other case, the result may be like Phineas Gage, with a loss of sexual inhibitions, indifference to rules, lack of concern for others, inappropriate joking, and loss of sensitivity to the consequences of one's actions. One interpretation of these divergent responses is that the sensitive nerves of the frontal lobe, if damaged, lose their ability to check certain emotional tendencies that are present below the surface of the personality. Some have a predisposition to depression that will surface if these higher control centers are damaged. Others do not tend toward depression, but rather toward a socially unacceptable, sensuous behavior and a lack of restraint. These different responses to frontal lobe damage merit an examination of their relationship to depression. An individual who displays inappropriate, uninhibited behavior may seem happy-go-lucky, untroubled, and even euphoric, but in reality may be displaying telltale signs of frontal lobe impairment. If so, when his surrounding circumstances change, that impairment can lead to outright depression. increased knowledge of frontal lobe and depression relationship. The pivotal role of the frontal lobe in depression has only recently been recognized. Before 1990, the frontal lobe's role in depression was not well recognized. Its intimate involvement in our emotional well-being is now affirmed. Historically, neuroscientists interested in depression focused on the emotional areas of the brain, namely the limbic system, amygdala, and other lower brain structures. See Chapter 1 and Appendix 2 for details on brain structure. They identified the frontal lobe as the analytical control center of the brain without any significant role in the emotions. In the 1990s and 2000s, understanding began to change as researchers recognized that the brain's frontal lobe is far more than a control center. It is intimately involved in emotional well-being. Much of this exciting new information regarding the frontal lobe's role in depression occurred as a result of very sophisticated brain scans, including PET scans, positron emission tomography, SPECT scans, single photon emission computed tomography, and regional blood flow scans. These brain imaging techniques represent a technology far different than conventional CT, computerized axial tomography, scans, and MRIs, magnetic resonant imaging. CT scans and MRIs can show very detailed pictures of the brain structure. However, PET and SPECT and regional blood flow scans are able to assess brain function. These high-tech scanning devices are very expensive and consequently quite scarce. They are typically found in university research centers, but not in your average neighborhood healthcare facility. Despite the scarcity of these high-end tools, university-based researchers use them with dramatic results. They have gained new insights into the frontal lobe. Depressed victims have low blood flow to the frontal lobe. It is now well established that one of the main characteristics of virtually all depressed individuals, no matter what the underlying cause, is a significant decrease in the frontal lobe's blood flow and activity. The decreased activity is in the foremost portion of the frontal lobe. It is called the prefrontal cortex. This is the area of the brain that is indeed the control center of the brain. But it is much more. It is now recognized as the site of behavior planning, decision making, emotional control, self-awareness, and self-independence. Frontal lobe portions have distinct functions. The prefrontal cortex is made up of several portions, and each has a different job to do. One part appears to be involved in knowledge, reasoning, and perception processes. It is closest to the side of the brain and farther from the forehead, and is called the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. Another region of the prefrontal cortex appears to be related to social and emotional functions. This region is closer to the forehead and is in the middle behind the eyes. It is called the orbitomedial prefrontal cortex. Additional involvement of the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex is reported by Sarrazin and colleagues. These French researchers demonstrated that executive functions were also housed primarily in the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. Such executive functions include conceptual elaboration, working memory, selective attention, verbal fluency, and recall. A number of behavioral abnormalities were linked to the orbitomedial prefrontal cortex. Behavioral disorders linked to this prefrontal area include apathy, restlessness, impulsiveness, indifference to rules, decrease in attention, personality changes, and impairment of intellectual and emotional control. It is also important to note that the orbitofrontal area of the prefrontal cortex was linked to impaired ability to make realistic, appropriate plans and to carry them out. Brain connections, as identified by Sarrazin and colleagues, are illustrated in Appendix 1. Cases of depression with frontal lobe damage. A person who has had a stroke has brain damage resulting from a lack of blood supply to the brain. A Korean study by Kim and colleagues found that strokes caused by damage to the frontal lobe are closely related to depression. The location of brain damage in 148 stroke patients revealed that 75% of those with stroke in the medial or central part of the frontal lobe suffered from depression. In contrast, those with strokes in other brain areas had no depression. Of further interest, 100% of those with medial frontal lobe strokes also demonstrated emotional incontinence, inappropriate laughter or crying, or both. As we've seen, brain damage can result from surgical removal, injury, or stroke. It can also result from Alzheimer's disease. Regardless of what process damages the frontal lobe, the results tend to be the same. Hirono and colleagues found that Alzheimer's patients with more damage to their frontal lobes tend to exhibit significantly more depression. This study also yielded other findings of interest in light of our earlier exploration of connections between the frontal lobe and behavior. Those with greater depression were significantly more likely to have other behavioral problems, such as anxiety, delusions, and lack of personal discipline. So far, we've looked at adult populations regarding the connections between frontal lobe damage and depression. A study of depressed adults and adolescents who never experienced structural brain injuries has been made. Surprisingly, the same brain areas were linked to depression. Another study of a group of depressed adolescents by Harvard medical researchers led by R.J. Steingard showed altered brain metabolism in the critical orbitofrontal regions of the frontal lobe. Other evidence has been amassed for the connection between frontal lobe structures close to the middle of the brain, referred to as medial, and their relationship to emotions in general and depression specifically. The University of Arizona's R.D. Lane and colleagues use PET scanning to identify brain areas associated with three basic emotions, happiness, sadness, and disgust. They discovered that each of these emotions resulted in enhanced activity in the medial prefrontal cortex. Several parts of the frontal lobe are involved. Thus far, we have seen the role of the medial orbitofrontal portion of the frontal lobe in relation to depression and emotions. I must point out that other regions in the frontal lobe are also involved with emotions and depressive illness. Nothing is simple when it comes to human brain function. British researchers, Bench and colleagues, have repeatedly demonstrated that in addition to the structures close to the middle of the brain, like the medial orbitofrontal territory, there are other brain regions that play a key role in emotions and that are affected by depression. Foremost among these other areas is the region toward the back and sides of the front portion of the frontal lobe, the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. In the experience of Bench's group, decreased blood flow and resultant decreased activity of the left dorsolateral prefrontal cortex actually causes greater mood disturbances and slowing of body movements that accompany depression than changes in other brain areas. Although different groups may argue about which area of the frontal lobe is the most important in depression, there's no question that reductions in frontal lobe function lie at the heart of depression. Its function is related to blood flow and nerve chemistry. However, associations between frontal lobe impairment and depression raise the chicken or egg question. What really came first? Does depression cause changes in the frontal lobe, or do frontal lobe problems set the stage for depression? Cause and effect, impaired frontal lobe and depression. Drevets presents compelling evidence that frontal lobe problems are the cause and the effects are depressive symptoms. Even after depressive symptoms are resolved, abnormalities persist in the orbital and medial prefrontal cortex areas. The evidence suggests that these frontal lobe areas affect emotional behavior and stress, suggesting from Drevet's perspective, quote, that dysfunction involving these regions may be involved in the cause of depressive symptoms, unquote. Complementing this research is growing evidence that enhancing frontal lobe function early in life may provide a safeguard against depression. In another report by Steingard and colleagues, the Harvard researchers attempted to probe the roots of depression by studying the brains of depressed children with MRIs. They compared 65 children and adolescents with depression to a control group of psychiatric patients who were not depressed. The depressed children had significantly smaller frontal lobes. Other portions of the brain are involved. I would be negligent to leave the impression that the frontal lobe is the only area that is involved in depression. It clearly is not. A host of brain structures can either affect or be affected by depression. Other well-studied examples include deep internal brain structures, such as the hippocampus, amygdala, and others. However, my purpose in singling out the frontal lobe is not only because of its strong connection with depression, but also for three other critical reasons. First, the frontal lobe holds the position as the preeminent control center for all conscious brain functions, including the ability to identify and implement strategies to help alleviate depression. Indeed, Drevets suggests that dysfunction of the prefrontal cortex is related to depression through its inability to modulate deeper internal brain structures like the amygdala. Second, this brain region has been linked to other symptoms that can complicate depression, such as violence. And third, a growing body of evidence suggests that relatively simple lifestyle choices can improve frontal lobe performance, as we shall discover later in the chapter. Sections of the brain. To better appreciate the frontal lobe and its critical role in depression, we need to first review some brain anatomy. Then we will proceed to look in greater detail at some of the vital functions performed by this preeminent brain area. Functions of the frontal lobe. The brain is divided into several sections or lobes. Each lobe has specific functions. Behind the forehead are the frontal lobes. For convenience, we often refer to both the right and the left frontal lobe collectively as the frontal lobe. It is the seat of judgment, reasoning, intellect, and the will. It is the control center for our entire being. Some scientists refer to the frontal lobe as the crown of the brain. Studies show that this so-called crown performs a variety of vital functions. Notice that there are four main lobes of the brain shown in Figure 6 on page 180 in your book. The characteristics of spirituality, will, and morality determine our unique individuality, and they all reside in the frontal lobe. As we have observed, a person who incurs damage to the frontal lobe may not change in appearance, but if you interact with him, it is usually apparent that he is not the same person you once knew. The Book of Books alludes to the significance of the frontal lobe in knowing God. The last book of the Bible makes a provocative statement, quote, "And they shall see his face, and his name shall be in their foreheads," unquote, Revelation 22:4. This text suggests that God's character, his name, is reproduced in our character, exemplified by the frontal lobe, which is just behind the forehead. Relative size of the frontal lobe. It is fascinating to observe how the relative size of the frontal lobe differs among men and various beasts. It is the frontal lobe that largely sets humans apart from the rest of the animal kingdom. Animals with the smallest frontal lobes are limited to instinct-driven performance. Those with larger frontal lobes are able to execute more complex functions. Cats with only 3.5% of the brain in the frontal lobe are limited in judgment and reasoning power. They have very limited capability to analyze information and make judgments based on new information, so they basically rely on instinct. Dogs are more trainable, with 7% of their brain being frontal lobe. Among the animals, chimpanzees have the largest frontal lobe, up to 17% of their brain. Humans, on the other hand, have 33 to 38% of their brain in the frontal lobe. Some animals have portions of the brain that are more developed than human beings. For instance, compared to humans, chimpanzees have much larger cerebellums, the brain area that controls coordination. This stands to reason because chimps need well-honed balance and agility to swing from tree to tree. Birds also have well-developed cerebellums for flying, landing, and hunting. All of these activities require a high level of coordination. Other animals may have a much more generous occipital lobe, the brain center where vision is housed. Hence, their eyesight is generally much better than that of humans. Still, other animals have more developed parietal lobes. What sets humans apart is clearly a significantly larger frontal lobe that provides the capacity for elevated spiritual reasoning and superior learning ability. It is the largest lobe of the brain. Common effects of compromised frontal lobes. Through studies of accidental damage to the frontal lobes combined with the results of frontal lobotomies and studies of drugs that affect the front brain, scientists have identified many of the effects of compromised frontal lobes. These effects are impairment of moral principle, social impairment, lack of foresight, inability to abstract reason, inability to interpret proverbs, diminished ability for mathematical understanding, loss of empathy, and lack of restraint. The first two effects of a compromised frontal lobe listed are impairment of moral principle and social impairment. As an illustration of these effects, consider the following true story. One woman, prior to going into frontal lobotomy surgery, was asked, "What would you do if you lost a watch that you had borrowed?" She answered, "I would need to pay for the watch or buy one and return it." Following her recovery from surgery, she was asked the same question. This time her answer was, "I'd have to borrow another watch." Regarding foresight, consider the very limited foresight a small child has. As he matures, the effect of frontal lobe development is apparent. At first, he can only conceptualize one day at a time. You can tell him that something is going to happen tomorrow, but he will remember it only if you remind him. As that child matures, he will begin to gain more foresight. By the time he reaches second grade, he realizes that next year he will be in the third grade. As he continues to mature, he will eventually be planning a career. The frontal lobe continues to develop for 30 years. With proper training, as the child matures into an adult, he will ultimately realize that his actions today have a bearing on his eternity ahead. This is the highest development of the frontal lobe. Abstract ideas, such as interpreting proverbs, involve special brain processes. If you ask someone who does not have full frontal lobe capacities to interpret a proverb like, "People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones," the reply may be, "Obviously, they'll damage their house." This example illustrates concrete reasoning, a mental process that tends to miss abstract concepts. Regarding mathematical understanding, calculation actually occurs in the back part of the parietal lobe. Thus, even without frontal lobe function, you can have great mathematical skills in adding, subtracting, and multiplication. However, when it comes to higher mathematics that require reasoning, such as algebra, geometry, and especially calculus, frontal lobe functions are required for flawless results. An unimpaired frontal lobe is also a must if you want to empathize most effectively with someone who is beset with a problem. This is especially true if the person is going through something that you have never personally experienced. Psychological diseases are rooted in an impaired frontal lobe. We have looked at some evidence of an association between depression and frontal lobe dysfunction. Other psychiatric conditions can stem from frontal lobe deficiencies. It is not surprising that some psychological diseases have their root in frontal lobe problems. Five of these disorders are mania, obsessive-compulsive disorder, appetite increase, depression, and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. The first one, mania, is an emotional disorder characterized by remarkable activity, excitement, rapid flow of ideas, insomnia, and unstable attention span. It can have its root in compromised frontal lobe function. Second, obsessive-compulsive disorder, as characterized by uncontrollable intruding thoughts and resulting ritualized actions, can also arise from frontal lobe impairment. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is another result of frontal lobe problems. Between 1990 and 1995, the number of people diagnosed with ADHD in the U.S. rose from 900,000 to more than 2 million, although this official statistic is probably inflated. Frontal lobe health determines our character and quality of life. As we've seen, medical research has conclusively demonstrated the frontal lobe's vital role in determining our character. An impaired frontal lobe results in an impaired character. Self-control, trustworthiness, reliability, serious reading, abstract reasoning, and interpersonal relationships are all complex activities that depend upon a well-functioning frontal lobe. Accidental or surgically planned damage to the frontal lobe is one thing. But what about damage that may result from an unhealthy lifestyle? The most common cause of frontal lobe impairment today are not surgeries, occupational injuries, or other trauma. We will see that the main cause of compromised frontal lobe function is harmful life habits. This is the most important message of this chapter. Secondary to this is the message to protect yourself from damage to the frontal lobe from injuries caused by accidents and sports participation. Depression is rooted in our frontal lobe. I believe it is vital to recognize that depression has its root in the frontal lobe. The frontal lobe can be compromised in ways that are not limited to surgeries or injuries. Many of our most cherished habits may give us short-term gratification, but silently rob us of that which is of inestimable value, peak functioning of our frontal lobe. And when this highest part of our brain is impaired, it typically affects not only our emotional stability, but who we really are. The effects of lifestyle and nutrition on our frontal lobe are, in my opinion, ultimately more important than their effects on heart disease, cancer, osteoporosis, kidney failure, and all other degenerative diseases combined. We need to make it top priority to protect our brain, because our quality of life originates here. As we shall see, lifestyle choices protect the health of the frontal lobe, and a healthy frontal lobe puts us in the best position to take charge of our lives and to make right choices. This means that as I make healthier choices, my frontal lobe performance improves, making further lifestyle changes even easier. Perhaps no frontal lobe function is as vital to making lifestyle changes easier than the power of the will. Willpower may not seem all that important in our daily lives, but it is absolutely essential. Many of my patients have died because of deficient willpower. I'm not talking about individuals who lose the will to live. I'm referring to the cases of thousands who died because they felt they did not have the willpower to change their lifestyle before it was too late. Weak willpower, the road to earthly suffering and premature death. Today, tens of thousands are languishing on their deathbeds because of willpower deficiencies. The consequences of weak willpower, such as diabetics dying of end-stage heart disease and kidney disease due to lack of willpower by not controlling their blood sugar, smokers dying with cancer or heart disease due to a lack of willpower to kick the habit, and those with high blood pressure having a stroke due to a lack of willpower to control their blood pressure. These cases and many others testify to the great dearth of willpower in our land. In fact, one of my greatest concerns while writing this book is that many of the important and life-changing insights that I present will never gain a foothold in the lives of many readers. The reason? A lack of willpower. Impaired frontal lobe causes an impaired will. From this perspective, I underscore the fact that one of the frontal lobe's most vital functions is the will. Scientists have demonstrated that what we call willpower resides in the frontal lobe. Dr. Burnell Baldwin, Ph.D., and neurophysiologist at Georgia's Wildwood Lifestyle Center and Hospital, summarized some of the important literature on the will in an article written to leaders of faith communities. Baldwin pointed out that research on World War I veterans with shrapnel wounds to the brain uncovered weaknesses in willpower among those who injured the front of their brains. Those who sustained injuries to the back of their heads, however, experienced no impairment of their will. Perhaps this is why depression is often such a vicious cycle. Disease processes impair the very part of the brain that needs to be active in implementing mind-healing choices, the frontal lobe. Closely related to willpower is our ability to discern the vital issues in overcoming a challenge. If we do not see the issues clearly, it is likely that we may not recognize our need to exert willpower and to overcome a challenge. To illustrate this point, Dr. Baldwin cited the research of Russian scientist A.R. Luria. Luria found that individuals with normal frontal lobes had the ability to draw rapid conclusions about the meaning of carefully designed pictures. Individuals with frontal lobe impairment could accurately describe components of the picture, but they tended not to see the big picture, the broader meaning behind the details. This is very relevant to lifestyle change. Deficiencies in insight leave us destined to overlook how key lifestyle concepts apply to our own lives. Willpower shortfalls, on the other hand, predispose us to failure, even in the areas where we clearly recognize that we have a problem. In short, the twin frontal lobe functions of insight and will are both indispensable to the successful application of all the lifestyle materials I present in this book. Unfortunately, for those who are depressed or have other impairments of the frontal lobe, it is possible that they will underestimate the importance of the solutions that I share within these pages. Furthermore, even if they recognize the need for lifestyle changes, their struggling frontal lobes may tell them that they are powerless to make such changes. Impaired frontal lobe weakens the ability to plan. The above relationships were underscored by the previously cited work of Sarzin and colleagues. They found that the impairment of the critical orbitomedial region of the prefrontal cortex was associated with serious deficiencies in the ability to make plans and carry them out. Deficits were apparent in three categories: activating a plan, executing a plan, and controlling a plan. Activating a plan relates to one's ability to express, maintain, and initiate appropriate plans for the future. Executing a plan deals with sequentially implementing and maintaining a plan until the goal has been reached. It is the ability to choose a means to achieve a goal that empowers the individual to adjust to changes in the environment by implementing changes in the plan. Lastly, controlling a plan enables one to be aware of the consequences of his or her actions, respect social rules, and resist environmental interference. These three associations make a profound point. The areas of the frontal lobe responsible for emotional health are the very same areas that help us to successfully set goals and achieve them. This helps explain the vicious cycle of depression. The very brain areas that are affected by the disorder are the ones that we need most to enlist if we are going to find a solution. How then do we break the cycle? By identifying our personal habits that we need to prioritize and enlisting the help of others to keep us focused on those behaviors that enhance the function of the frontal lobe. It is a disturbing fact that many mental health practitioners are not aware that current lifestyle habits of their patients may be contributing to psychological illness. Standardized treatments such as psychological counseling and behavioral therapy are currently popular and are sometimes beneficial in addressing depression at various stages. However, if those who feel the need for counseling would also adopt a truly healthy lifestyle, as presented in this book, they would see greater improvement in their mental health and it would occur in a shorter time. Injured frontal lobe causes violent behavior. Problems with frontal lobe function are also linked to mental health issues that can produce behavior problems in someone who suffers from depression. This is a step beyond the connections already noted between frontal lobe impairment and other behavioral problems, such as obsessive-compulsive disorder. A case in point is violence. In a study of Vietnam veterans with head injuries, violent behavior was clearly linked to frontal lobe injuries. The results indicated that patients with damage to the ventromedial frontal lobe, the middle portion of the lobe closest to the forehead, demonstrated greater aggression and violent tendencies than patients with damage to other brain areas and non-injured participants. The authors concluded that their findings, quote, support the hypothesis that ventromedial frontal lobe lesions increase the risk of aggressive and violent behavior, unquote. Since frontal lobe injuries are associated with both depression and violence, we would expect that depression in combination with violence would be seen in individuals with frontal lobe impairments for reasons other than injury. Indeed, this is the case. Depression and violence are clearly linked with several psychiatric studies. One study of 600 men by Teplin and colleagues looked at relationships between those who were jailed for violent behavior and those who were depressed. He found a strong correlation between violence and depression. Another study, which involved female detainees, showed similar correlation. Jordan and his colleagues demonstrated similar increased rates of depressive problems, this time in incarcerated women as opposed to jail detainees. These relationships are important from the standpoint of public health, but the linkage between violence and depression also poses unique risks for depressed patients as well. Recent research indicates that ventral frontal lobe dysfunction not only predisposes to violence toward others, but violence towards self in the form of suicide. The bottom line? The frontal lobe wields extensive control over mental health. Strategies to enhance frontal lobe are not limited to the prevention or relief of depression. They may also help avert some of the most socially damaging consequences of depression, such as violent and criminal behavior. You've been listening to Part 1 of Chapter 9 in the book Depression: The Way Out by Dr. Neil Nedley, copyright 2014. To purchase this or other books by Dr. Nedley, or to learn more about the 10-day residential or 8-week community programs, visit www.nedleyhealthsolutions.com.